19 minutes to 9. Welcome back to Sabah al Muslim and Radio Islam International. Time now for the weekly edition of the Cape Report. Joining us on the line, we have news editor at Voice of the Cape, Taslim Adams. Taslim, as always, Jazakumullah for your time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you, Malana, and assalamu alaikum to your listeners this morning.
It's Hajj season. We understand there is a visa delay. Tell us about that.
Yeah, about 20 Hujjaj were apparently held back in South Africa for a few days over the past weekend after they hadn't received their Hajj visas. And very simply, there was a glitch in the integrated filing system between local Hajj operators and the Saudi Hajj Ministry, which is being rolled out for the very first time this year. So Shaheen Esel from SAUK explained that passports from different Hajj operators were submitted to the embassy for the issuing of visas for those accredited Hujjaj. Unfortunately, the embassy returned the passports because they were unreadable. And upon further investigation from the Ministry of Hajj and Foreign Affairs, it appears as if there was some kind of technical glitch in the system. So SAUK, together with local Hajj operators, they had to notify all those affected Hujjaj, and they were basically using the past few days to find an immediate resolution to the problem. And I believe that those that were actually meant to leave this past weekend eventually did depart despite the delay. And then yesterday we heard that 12 more Hujjaj are now still waiting for their Hajj visas. According to Sadiq Stienkamp from Satoa, he's saying that the problem stems from an actual failure to actually understand how the system works. And he's saying, you know, a lot of the issues actually boils down to training, where people don't understand the electronic application. And he's made it very clear that at no point have local Hujjaj actually been denied visas. It's merely a delay because of the problems with the system, and it's not an isolated one. There have been separate cases from different Hajj operators in Cape Town. And he's saying that there is now, currently there is a service underway being done to the electronic system, which could take some time. So there's very little that can be done here from the local side with regards to this matter. And he was saying, you know, the system works very differently from the past, where they had often done things manually. It gives the ministry real-time access to information because the operators are now entering the information into the system. It means that on the other side in Saudi Arabia, they can immediately see who are the people coming, who are the travelers, where they will be staying, and, you know, all other essential details. So it makes it a lot easier for operators in South Africa as well. You know, once you are activated, everything goes online, so no matter where you are in the Saudi Kingdom, details about your movements are online for the relevant people to actually see. Sadiq Stienkamp, for one, believes that the whole concept is a far more efficient way of actually controlling the movement of Hujjaj, and like he was saying, with any new system, glitches are to be expected. But already on social media, I've seen people venting and saying, you know, not again, this is again another Hajj visa bungle like 5 years ago. You know, my feeling is that perhaps we shouldn't be too negative. Over the past 2 years, we've seen the systems have gradually improved. Hajj authorities, I think, have learned from their mistakes, and we've seen far less mess-ups with regards to Hajj than previous years. And I think as the media, we shouldn't necessarily exacerbate the situation by sensational reporting and just be a bit more careful with regards to the issue.
Indeed. Is there still confusion over Crystal Valley halal status?
Absolutely, Molina. I think it's actually gone from bad to worse, because a lot of consumers here have been left with a lot more questions than answers on the halal status of Crystal Valley milk, because SANA and the MJC Halal Trust now seems to be butting heads on the matter. And the issue right now just stems on the brand of Crystal Valley milk that's imported from Poland, which has no halal certification on its labeling on the box. So last week, as I mentioned, SANA stated that its own investigations deemed the milk to be fully halal compliant. But then the MJC Halal Trust issued a statement to the opposite. And at last week, or the week before, when we were slowly doing our investigation, the MJC Halal Trust was abroad traveling at a conference, so we couldn't really get a proper discussion. So Monday, we got them both on air, and my understanding is that both bodies were involved in the certification of local produced Crystal Valley food products, all of which have been declared fully halal compliant. So right now, it's just the box milk, as I mentioned. So according to the MJC Halal Trust investigation, the inspectors had previously approached the company involved in the milk's importation. It's a company called Mont Eagle. The MJC Halal Trust director, Sheikh Ahmed Siddiq, said that they had sent queries to both Mount Eagle and the production factory in Poland, provided they both provided confirmation that the milk was not certified halal. So Sheikh Ahmed says that when it came to the issue of the product spec sheet, they found that the production plant in Poland is not halal certified, and on the basis of that information that they received, they could not verify the halal status. This investigation was apparently conducted well before Sana's, and the MJC Halal Trust had not really informed Sana about their decision at the time. Sana's Molina Saeed Navlaki has confirmed that they've been fully aware of the MJC Halal Trust investigation into the matter. Their own information on the issue came about around about the 12th of August, when the ShopRite store manager offered to put that sign warning consumers that the milk was not halal, which I mentioned last week. And Molina Navlaki was saying that their communication with ShopRite and their so-called in-depth investigations with dairies in Poland confirmed that while the product didn't have any certification, the manufacturing process was still very much in accordance with Islamic requirements. The specific one that Mount Eagle brings into the country doesn't necessarily have certification, but for products that don't, Navlaki was saying that we can't necessarily say that it's not halal. You know, he was saying that we have to be very cautious when we make these kind of statements, especially in items of essential need to the Muslim community. So based on this, Sana is of the view that the product is definitely suitable for Muslim consumption. And while Crystal Valley Full Cream Milk may not have that halal certification, Sana has stressed that, you know, many of the other imported Crystal Valley products do. So right now there's still a lot of uncertainty in consumers. You know, they've been advised to rather than just use their own discretion when purchasing this particular product. I prefer fresh milk anyway. What is your take, Molina?
Fresh milk, anyway.
Yeah.
Tell us about the journal who's on a crusade against banking.
Yeah, Cape Town journalist Yazid Kamaldi, and a very good friend of mine, he started a social media campaign against Standard Bank for what he believes is unethical banking practices. So the story in a nutshell goes as follows. He traveled to Brazil a few months ago, early in the year, and when he returned, he found that 15,000 rand was missing from his bank account. He said that while in Brazil, he had been using a Brazilian SIM card in his cell phone and was not really aware of any activity on his account. So when he returned back home, he went to Standard Bank to report the incident, and he was told that the case would be handed over to the card fraud investigation unit, was given a reference number and told that the bank would get back to him. He says weeks went by and there was no resolution. Eventually he was told his card was cloned and he would only get half of his money back. Standard Bank said that they had investigated the matter, and their view that was that their offer was sufficient given the facts of Yazid's case. And then they told him to direct his complaint to the Ombudsman for Banking Services to address his dispute if he wasn't happy or with that. Yazid is saying that right now he's incensed with Standard Bank's level of service and the way they've been dealing with him, saying that they've been arrogant in their approach. And he's not going to lodge the complaint with the Ombudsman just yet, because he feels he wants to persevere on his own, and he feels he definitely has a leg to stand on. And he's gone the social media route, and the story's gone viral on social media and in the papers. He's posted several videos on Facebook which have drawn in about, you know, over 25,000 views at this stage, and very nicely playing on the hashtag #PayBackMyMoney. And in the papers, you know, it's been a big story. I've seen readers SMSing, expressing their support. A lot of them have been slamming Standard Bank in the SMS section of the paper. We had him on air on Sunday morning, and his story drew in a lot of listeners with similar experiences, you know, others asking him to take other banking issues to task. And he's also saying that he's gotten a lot of messages from Standard Bank clients in the U.S. and other places abroad also venting about the level of service. Other people are saying that if they offered 50% back in writing, they basically admitted guilt. So if it goes to court, surely he should get the full refund. And they feel that, you know, it is the bank's job to secure your money. And if the card is cloned, they should be held responsible. So they should be paying back the money. Right now, I think things are not looking very good for Standard Bank's image because complaints are coming through thick and fast. You know, South Africans are generally given very bad service at banks. And I don't know how many times, I recall called so many times going to Standard Bank opposite here at the UC during lunchtime, and there's one teller open. So I think, Yazid, the bigger picture is really not just uncovering the bad customer service, but also unethical banking practices in general. I think one of the questions being asked is whether Standard Bank can really be blamed for this. You know, is this negligence on the bank's part? As a consumer, I think my initial feeling is that banks are perhaps 100%, should be 100% accountable when a card is cloned and money is stolen from your account, because I feel that, you know, our banks are there to guard our funds, and surely that can't be our fault, because in South Africa, we pay very high bank fees, and one should expect a service that is guaranteed. But at the same time, as a journalist, I'm trying to be very impartial here, and I read Standard Bank's Code of Banking Practices, and it clearly states that there's a clause that says a client may also be liable for losses if he or she acted negligently or without reasonable care, and this may have contributed or caused the losses. I think the question one could also ask is, what constitutes acting negligently? You know, if you are traveling abroad and you're unaware that your account was closed or cloned, can you be called negligent? In the code of conduct, you know, it's quoted, unless we can show that you have acted fraudulently, negligently, or without reasonable care, we will refund you the amount of any transaction together with any interest and charges associated with the disputed transaction in the following circumstances. So it goes on to speak about, you know, if you are unable to access internet banking or any other application, if there's a malfunction of any equipment, or if you have inability to access telephone or cell phone banking, etc., etc. So, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting case, and it will be interesting to see how Standard Bank deals with the situation and where it goes to next for Yazid.
Interesting indeed. And finally, tell us about TIC being taken to reduce stress.
Yeah, a new study has found that many TIC addicts in the Western Cape are actually using the drug to cope with stress and to basically numb the negative memories of traumatic events. The study was conducted by the Medical Research Council and the Duke University School of Medicine in the U.S. and specifically focused on teenage TIC users in Delft, where they found that many of the abusers had classical symptoms of mental illness. So you're looking at things like depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. However, very few of those subjects ever received mental health treatment. About 360 users were surveyed, apparently the largest sample of community recruited users in South Africa, and almost 50% met the criteria for moderate depression, while 54% met the screening criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. Almost half of the users reportedly were seen to be extremely bothered by psychological symptoms in the past, with the women more stressed and experiencing PTSD symptoms than men. Many women used it to cope with sexual and physical abuse as a possible avoidance strategy to perhaps block or numb the negative psychological effects of stress. Many were reported to have feelings of regret and low self-worth. That was also fairly evident in men, with many using TIC to facilitate some kind of emotional discharge. More than a third of the women and more than 10% of men reported prior suicide attempts, and that's apparently higher than the national average of 3%. And the report that says that although a link existed between TIC abuse and mental health, many users were struggling to cope with daily stress, and surprisingly, only 7.2% of those sampled ever received treatment for a psychological problem. The lead researcher, Dr. Melissa Watch, was saying that the study's findings provided further evidence of the need to actually integrate mental health services into the existing substance abuse program, and she's saying that prevention programs indicated for individuals who are using TIC but are not yet dependent. It should more focus on developing adaptive coping and problem-solving strategies in specifically looking with regards to these particular cases.
Taslim, jazakumullah for the update. Much appreciated. And we will talk again next week, inshallah.
Shukran, Maulana. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was Taslim Adams, editor at Voice of the Cape, news editor, and she was doing the weekly Cape report. It brings us to 5 minutes before 9, time for us to sign off. Until we meet again, inshallah, tomorrow morning, fi imanillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.